Hey, welcome to the Right Side of Zero. If this is your first time here, I appreciate it if you can click on the subscribe button. Is the best way to help this podcast. So today we're doing the summary of the week of the 15th. It was an interesting week. We started with Freakonomics Radio. They were talking about fraud in academic documents and just the massive volume of, let's just say, distorted data used to publish these academic documents that so many people use. And they mentioned the case of an insurance company using one of these academic papers. It was something about people being truthful if they signed a document at the top or whether they sign a document at the end of all the questions. And at some point, the concept was that if people signed a document at the beginning of the document top of the first page, that everything that comes afterwards, it's going to be more truthful. Like, what they said was that people would be more honest about the answers they give on a document if they sign it at the top of the first page of the document. And a professor at Harvard participated publishing this academic paper, and insurance companies were using it. And then came along a person who wanted to find a way to make people honest, answering questions online. And when this same professor went to look at the study and tried to replicate the results of the original study, he's like, this is just wrong. So I'm going to try a larger sample to see if I get the same results that were used for the publishing of the academic paper. And he was unable to get the same results. And he's like, this is false. This paper is just wrong. The findings are wrong. If it doesn't matter if people sign at the beginning or at the end of a document with regards of how honest they're going to be. And then came along a group of people, a professor from Wharton, a professor from Chile, a professor from another distinguished university in Spain. They came together to create a group who would look at all these academic papers, and if there was fraud in any of the papers, they would bring it up. And they brought it up with the people at Harvard. Well, they came to the professor first. Other professors were involved. I think there was another professor at Duke University and a woman professor at Harvard. And what happened was that the professor, the main lead of the study, he was like, yeah, it's wrong. But since it was so many years ago and, you know, I found it was wrong, like he's like, I just bringing all this up and trying to just invalidate the paper is just like, you know, if it has to be done, it has to be done. Like this group from Wharton, Chile and Spain wanted him to participate, bringing up the information to the, what do you call, like the council at Harvard, like on the top, the big guns, they had to know about this. And he's like, look, it's just, you can do it. Go ahead, tell them, you know, I'm aware of this and I will, you know, support whatever decision is made by the institution. And what happened was that the woman professor was given academic leave because of what happened with the study. And she sued Harvard and she sued the group that brought up the fact that there was fraud in the academic paper. And she sued for like $25 million. She's like, you've ruined my career, my standing, my reputation. And, you know, there's something like the group of professors that were bringing up different documents with fraud. And the thing is that the volume of documents with fraud, it was like a third of all academic papers have fraud in them. And I could be wrong. Look, I always leave the link to all these podcasts so you can go listen to them. And because it could actually be more, it could be two thirds of all academic papers with fraud. So, but I don't want to overestimate. But the thing is that it's like, and they were doing this with so many academic papers, and now that they face the lawsuit for $25 million, you know, they got enough money because they are members of large academic institutions and they have a lot of support, and they were able to get money to fight against this lawsuit. But they're like, you know, who else is going to be inclined to bring up any wrong information in any academic papers if they run the risk of being sued? And they say it's just the money that it takes and the time it consumes is so much that they, you know, anyone would lose interest in going forward with such an endeavor of, you know, exposing academic papers with fraud. Anyway, it was very interesting. The following day, I did a summary of two episodes of Gary Brecka. I did summaries of two episodes and one episode here. And Gary Brecka went on to talk about a very popular subject right now, which is the quality of oils we consume. And he has a list of 7 oils we need to keep in mind and avoid consuming at all costs. He talks about sunflower seed oil, cotton seed oil, grape seed oil, corn oil, rice bran oil. I think I'm missing a couple. I think canola oil. And there was one more. But anyways, like, just avoid these at all costs. If you're going to use any oils for cooking, use grass-fed butter. Use ghee, which is clarified butter. Or use coconut oil for, like, stovetop cooking or anything that goes, like, really high temperature. Because these three fats or oils, they keep their integrity at high temperatures, and it's the reason why you should avoid cooking with like high quality extra virgin olive oil. And I just found out recently from Philip Curry of the book A New Way to Bake that you can use olive oil to bake because the temperatures just remain at a safe level for the oil. And then Gary Brecka says that consuming extra virgin olive oil, if it's organic, USDA organic approved, and if it's high quality from one source, like you can validate that it has zero additives or flavorings or different origins, and that you know that it's cold pressed and it has all these boxes checked, that extra virgin olive oil is really healthy as a dressing on food. And then the other episode was a client of his, Stefan Kuzman. This client of his in a period of about 3 months came down 100 pounds or more. And it was an interview we could hear, or, and if you go to the episode, if you look it up, you can hear Stefan Kuzman talking to Gary Brecka and finding out what his experience was like and how Gary was able to help him first by looking for mutations. Like, this is something Gary Brecka just brings up all the time, that we have genetic mutations. Everyone has genetic mutations, which might affect how effectively some part of our body is working. And some, it's like knowing this allows us to supplement and to help ourselves sorry, it's a little late. We can help ourselves better. Like, people are just doing, like, they hear this is healthy, this is healthy, this is healthy, and people just are supplementing and drinking all these pills and all these pills and doing things. It's like, oh my God, aspirin is good for blood flow and the heart. So I'll do that. I'll do this. I'll drink aspirin every day. And then you hear something about some other vitamin or supplement and you start taking it. And he's like, but you're just sort of aiming in the dark. You need, if you know that you have a deficiency from some sort of genetic mutation, then you supplement to compensate for that deficiency. And that's it. You stop taking everything else because everything else is great. Yeah, and you'll be able to tell, look, everything is great about you, and this is the only part that needs supplementation. It's an interesting concept about Gary Brecka, who I've mentioned in the past is one of the three lead people in the subject of longevity and health. All right, quality of life in old age. And I heard David Sinclair talking about having a pill in 2 years' time, which is just a pill you'll take and it'll be used to rejuvenate. So the next episode was Max Lugavere talking to Nicholas Jammet. Nicholas Jammet is the founder with his two college friends called Sweet Green. It started 16 years ago, and it was a nice conversation, how it all started. And it just, for me, there was just a little bit of a, what's the word? Disappointment. It's just like, I would like to know how, because Nicholas says, you know, he came out of college with zero dollars to his name, like he was broke, and his friends, you know, the college kids just graduating, and he's like, I open up a business because I saw an opportunity in the market for healthy fast food. So it's a little expensive, but it's fast food and it's healthy. And he sourced all the vegetables from the same places that, you know, restaurants source their vegetables from. So he was getting, like, high quality, and he's still getting high quality. The one thing that I did not like about that podcast is that Max Lugavere, he understands the benefits of eating greens, but he also pushes, like, animal protein. And since I'm plant-based, I disagree with that, and I reject whenever anyone's, like, pushing, like, animal meat. And then the following day, I think I went 2 days, because Stephen Bartley did an episode with Dr. Aditi, and there was so much information, and it was so long that I split that Stephen Bartlett talk with Dr. Aditi Nerurkar. I don't know how to say her last name. But there was so much good information. I split it into two. She talks about stress. She's an expert on stress. She says that we can't focus. Like, it's so hard to focus if you're stressed out. And that just taking small breaks throughout the day. Like, one technique she gives is, like, when you finish a task and you're about to start another one, instead of just flowing through everything that you have to do, that just taking a break at that moment before you start the next task and just taking a deep inhale followed by a deep exhale, that action alone of separating your train of thought and actions into separate, and giving yourself that moment to do like a really deep breath and then a really deep exhale, that will just create a shift. But she talks about the benefits of water cooler talk. That also helps. That obviously the best is just going out for a walk in nature. She also, like, since I split it into two, the second episode I did, talking about the episode, I talked about the canary and the mine. I think most people have heard of that concept, how people that go into mines underground to work throughout time, they would hang a canary within the mine, and the canary would be singing. If the canary would ever stop singing, that would sound an alert for everyone to get out, because canaries are so sensitive to bad air that if they sense they're getting intoxicated or there's something poisonous in the air or something's wrong, canaries will stop singing. And as soon as they stop, it's a warning sign for everybody in the mine to get out. So they grab the canary, they get out, the canary survives, and everybody's doing well because they escape some sort of toxic environment, which the canary is able to perceive. So what Dr. Aditi says is that in front of stress, whenever we're stressed out, our body will give us a sign that we need to take a break, that we need to relax, that we need to change something. So whether it is a headache, whether it's pain in articulations, whether it's, you know, a pain in the neck or something will show up, some sort of symptom will show up if you're like overly stressed, and that's your canary in the mind. You need to learn to read your body to know that you need to do something about your stress. And then I finished the week with Michael Shermer, who was talking to Paul Halpern about the allure of the multiverse. So Paul Halpern wrote a book called Allure of the Multiverse. But the thing is that the conversation goes into why it's being so popular. Like, they mention all the different movies, so many different movies, like Everything Always All at Once. It's a movie about multiverses. So is the movie Endgame and that Marvel Cinematic Universe series. Loki. There was a movie. They mentioned a movie by Gwyneth Paltrow. They also mentioned The Matrix. They mentioned Spider-Man's in the multiverse. And the thing is that we all would like to contemplate changing something. And what if something changed? Oh, there's that series from Marvel as well. What If? It's a great series, by the way, because we already know the stories, and they're just changing things around a little bit. But the episode also mentions Einstein's theory that the past, the present, and the future all exist at the same time. So Einstein is telling that his concept is deterministic, and the people who subscribe to the Einstein theory that everything, the past, the present, and the future exist simultaneously, subscribes to determinism, meaning that we lose our free will because the past, the present, and the future all exist at the same time. So what gives us free will, according to scientists, is believing in quantum mechanics and quantum physics. Like, the quantum world contemplates the possibility of multiverses and having the ability to choose something at a given time and changing the course of your life with your free will. So I don't know. To me, so the concept of multiverses and parallel worlds is so difficult to grasp. Like, the sheer volume of possibilities is so many. And it's so, like, the possibilities added up to the possibilities with that everybody else has as well is just, it's just, and just within a single life, all the difference, like I have a certain profession, a certain education, a certain type of family. So I mean, my wonder is like, okay, so if there are universes with all the different possibilities of what my life could be like, but how about also the lives of everybody else you know? How are those changed, and how all those variables help change my variable? I don't know. I just think that's just so like mind-boggling of a concept. So this is the end of the summary. Thank you very much for being here. If you made it all the way to this point, I appreciate it. If you click the subscribe button, is the best way to support this podcast. We'll meet again on the right side of zero. Be well, and thank you very much.